This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. It is August 22nd, 2017. Above average investing for the average investor is what we talk about every day. This is an open forum. Everyone is welcome. Whether you're new to investing or have some experience, all kinds of money questions are welcome. We don't care. As long as it's financial in nature, we'll talk about it. And of course, I try to answer your questions live during this 4 to 5 Pacific time frame, Monday through Friday. But if you can't, you can call, leave your questions, as you know, on our answering system, and we'll answer the questions, hopefully, by the next Invest Talk. We try to do that. It's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 888-99-CHART. That happens to also be the live number right now. But when we're not live, you can still call that same number and ask your question. And we'll get to those questions in just a second. It's more like a collection of leftovers. Choices you made over the years. There may be stocks or funds or ETFs that have no business still being part of the mix in your portfolio. Your portfolio is a mess. How do you tidy it up? That's our main talking point today. But before we go any further, let's check the 24-hour listen line. It's open for your questions anytime you want to ask them.
Hey, Steve or Justin. It's Michael calling from Tampa, Florida. Guys, I just want to take a moment to thank you guys for doing your show. I love it, and it's quite inspiring, to say the least. I'm 22 years old, and I'm starting my MBA in January. And I'm actually, for the first time, taking a turn where I'm considering strongly to become a financial advisor. I had a phone interview today for an entry-level finance position with a financial advisor. And I have an actual interview next week. I was just wondering what questions I should be prepared for with the little to no knowledge I know as far as not having licenses, you know, just being more of a enthusiast, you know, not having real world experience, so to say. I just want to know what steps I need to take to get me to the path of becoming a financial advisor, and what questions in this interview I have next week, or what research I should do to prepare myself to really stand out. He told me he interviewed many people with licenses also and actual experience, but he hasn't decided if he wants to work with someone with fresh or to work with people with real world experience. So I want to definitely distinguish myself. I was wondering what I can do now to really stand out. What questions do you guys ask? I'll look forward to hearing your answer on the show. Thanks a lot, guys.
Well, that's pretty difficult, and thank you for the compliments. I know for myself, I definitely want to see enthusiasm, you know, interest, you know, lots of interest in the business itself, but not just picking stocks. I'm not interested in someone who thinks they can make millions of dollars in the market. You know, how I know that they don't have the skills. Everybody, when you start, we know you don't have the skills to know how to pick stocks or analyze stocks. We know that. That's what the whole thing is about. But you might want to try to demonstrate knowledge of economics. That might help. That always impresses me when people know, or for instance, did you know that the Federal Reserve that they're meeting, the various Federal Reserve chairmen or bankers around the world are meeting in Jackson Hole this week? And do you have any idea what economic events are coming that might push the economy one way or another? Or do you know, if you know anything about the economy and what drives it, interest rates, Federal Reserve rates, dollar strength or weakness, or what Trump is going to do to boost or to try to boost the economy, what kind of trouble he might have doing, anything along those lines, I think, are impressive, as opposed to, well, I really like Tesla because of these reasons. Because you don't know of the person you're talking to. You start talking about individual stocks. You don't know if the person you're talking to likes or dislikes Tesla for various fundamental reasons. So I would stay away from you know, talk about individual stocks. I would stay away from that and try to demonstrate interest, lots of interest in knowing how and learning. And if you know anything about the economy and how it works, that I think would be a good thing to throw in there. But it's a tough question. It's a tough business, by the way. Don't think it's interesting. I love it, but it's a hard business. Hard business. Yesterday, Justin talked about how low interest rates have moved people to chase yield, and we've talked about that many times. Also, many people are being pushed into assets they do not understand, and they're being exposed to risks they might not be aware of. That's common. While yields tend to be slow moving, risk levels ebb and flow pretty quickly. So what seemed a sure bet just a few months ago can suddenly change character when the risk pendulum starts to swing the other way. One of the most popular assets today are junk bonds. These are companies rated below triple B by Standard & Poor's, and they historically call them junk bonds. Historically, 42% of all corporate junk bonds ever issued have defaulted. 42%! However, investors are clearly overlooking that fact, clearly overlooking the historical risk levels of junk bonds, and accepting way lower rates than they should, yields than they should. So while it might be hard to handle low yields in CDs and money markets, you don't like it. It's not even outproducing really low inflation that we have. You know, you got to pay attention to the risks that you're taking when you reach for that higher yields. You can't control how the market moves, but you control the risk levels that you're taking. And if you venture too far afield, you're going to get burned. You're going to get burned. So let's get back to the phone, take another question from our 24-hour listener line. Oh, we have a live caller. Why don't we go into that one first? I'm sorry. BJ Fremont. How you doing, BJ?
I'm going good, and thanks for taking the call.
Thank you.
So my question is simple. We talk about there is a lot of cash standing on the sideline.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How do you get that quantitative number or some kind of yardstick through which you guys measure, analysts and financial forecasters, mm-hmm. that there is so much cash sitting outside? How do we know that?
Well, a lot of it, unfortunately, the way we used to know it pretty clearly is changing. And the way we used to know it pretty easily was look at how much cash the mutual funds are holding. Okay, that's one way we were able to look at it. Another way is to look at, well, how much cash is sitting in money market funds? And you still can do that. Those numbers exist. But the problem is that ever since the advent of ETFs, ETFs don't hold cash. They're fully invested. And they're a lot more popular in mutual funds now. So it's making it more difficult, BJ, to know exactly or have a very good idea how much cash is sitting on the sidelines. It's all anecdotal. A lot of it is anecdotal, meaning you don't have any hard facts. You don't.
So ETF is just like another stock. That cash is already in the market.
Yes.
So I think I will consider it to be not sitting outside.
That is correct.
So still the outside factors are money market and mutual funds are the two primary sources.
Yes.
Do you have any idea how it stands today as of now?
I can give you it's a higher than normal factor right now, higher than normal, which means it's over 10%. Now, BJ, the reason why I'm talking about mutual funds, even if it's a mutual fund in an index fund, that mutual fund will have 10% or so, 5-10% in cash to pay for redemptions. So they don't have to sell their holdings, even though they're in an index fund. They don't have to sell their holdings to give people back their money initially, unless there's a panic and then they have to start selling. But in a ETF, there is no cash. It's fully invested. So if you started cashing, a bunch of people, and BJ, we've never had this happen yet because this is a new phenomena. If everybody decides to get out of the market, out of their ETFs, every ETF has to sell stocks. They have to sell. They don't have cash. So they have to sell in the market. And if you get a lot of people panicking out of their ETF index funds, it's going to look pretty ugly.
Quickly. Thank you. That's very useful.
Thanks a lot. Thanks, BJ. I appreciate it. And no one knows, everybody. No one knows. Some people think, oh, it's no big deal. It's not going to happen. Some people are freaking out about it. You know, that like 25, 27% of all index money is in ETFs. You know, they're freaking out. Well, what happens when people want to get out and they all want to get out at the same time? Usually that's what happens. It's like a herd mentality. Everybody wants to get out. Now what we're going to see is a lot more pressure downward, quicker. That's what the fear is. It may not happen. Some people don't fear it at all. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time. 888-99-CHART is how to get through. And let's talk about your money on InvestTalk. We're going to talk to Ruby in San Mateo. How you doing, Ruby?
Hi, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
This is regarding the stock Union Pacific, symbol UNP.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to know the prospects of this company and what is your opinion? Get into this at this moment.
Okay, this is Union Pacific Corporation, everybody. It's a railroad in the transportation sector. And as you know, I talked about the transportation sector and how the Dow theory works using the transportation sector and the Dow 30 in the last couple of weeks. And so this was part of the transportation sector that's been weak in the last couple, 3 months. And it bottomed, it looked like a bottom right at the end of July. And it's trying to make its way up again, Union Pacific. It provides rail transportation with 32,000 miles. Okay, that in 23 states in the western U.S., my part of the country. They're going to make $5.79 this year after making $5.07 last year. So that's a like 14% increase. And then next year, $6.46 more per share. That's 12% increase. Yield is 2.3. Sales have been growing the last couple of quarters pretty steadily, and that's, you're seeing it, the stock's starting to recover. And of course, it had a really good day today, but the market had a really good day today, so it's kind of a difficult thing to say. Now, oh, it's doing great. So it was up 1.82% or $1.90 a share to $106. So $6.46 on a $6 stock, you're talking about, what, a 15 PE, which is not unreasonable when you have a return on equity of 21%. I think it's a pretty reasonable price, and this is, on a chart, a good place to buy it because it just popped above the 200-day moving average today. Now, Ruby, I'd probably give it a few more days because, you know, today was a pretty wild up day on the market. I'd give it a few more days. And if it stays above the 200-day moving average, which is like $105.50, then this would be a buy point. But there's going to be a lot of resistance at $110, $112. But it's a good, solid company starting to recover its sales and grow its earnings pretty good. As long as the economy does well, this should do well. Okay, Ruby?
Okay.
Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. UNP, everybody. UN is in Nancy, P is in Paul. Union Pacific Corporation. This is InvestTalk. I'm Steve Peasley, in case you forgot. What is your money question today? Do you have one? Let's talk about it. Get in touch. 888-99-CHART is how to reach me. You can do it directly at 4 to 5 Pacific Time. We're live. Let's talk to Bobby in Atlanta. How you doing, Bobby?
Hey, Steve. Good. How you doing?
Good. Thank you for the call.
Hey, what do you think of analog devices? A as in Apple, D as in David, I as in India.
Okay, it's been moving sideways ever since March, up and down, but mostly sideways, a little bit below its March highs, and that was about 80, 82.5. It spiked to 88 in June just for a couple, 3 days and fell right back down. So that was interesting. You know what that was about, by the way, that spike? In June?
No, I do not. Okay. No.
It's something I would like to know before I bought the stock. Just why? In just like 3 days, it popped up quite nicely. Then came right back down. It didn't really stay up there. Okay, manufacturer Analog Digital Mixed Signal Devices. It's a $29 billion company, so it's a big company. They're going to grow their earnings this year by 42%. And that could have been in June. That could have been, you know, earnings news, I mean, or earnings surprise with a big spike. Next year, it's only going to grow 6%. So next year, it's going to have make $4.63 a share, and it's a $79 stock, okay? So you're looking at about, what, 19 PE or so? And it's growing its sales dramatically in the most recent quarter, 47% growth in sales. Before that was a 28% growth. Before that was 3% growth, and then 1% growth. So it's on a growth pattern of sales, and it's reflecting it in the earnings. Not as strongly, but it's definitely reflecting in the earnings. So if it can keep this up, this stock is would be considered cheap, Bobby. If it could keep that kind of growth in sales, 20%, 30%, 40%, almost 47%. Well, I don't think it can, but if it goes down even to 20, 30%, that's a huge growth for a huge company like this. And a return on equity is 19. That means the price where it is right now is a really good price, $79. It was up almost 2% today. The 200-day moving average is $76.94. Okay, so let's say $77. As long as it stays above that, this is a buy. Okay.
Okay.
I kind of like it here. If it breaks below the 200-day moving average, then it makes me pretty nervous. Then it's going to go down to 74. And then it has support, then at 74, then it's 70. I mean, it has support. But right now, it's been moving sideways for a long time while the earnings and sales are jumping up. And that means that the odds are good, Bobby, that it'll break up. The odds are good.
Okay.
Only the market will drag it down. If the market all collapses and drags things down, it'll go down. But that'll just make it a better buy when it recovers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Bobby.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate the call. Let's go to Anthony in San Francisco. How you doing, Anthony?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for the call. You want to talk about life insurance? I used to work for insurance companies in New York for 8 or 9 years, so I'm pretty I know a lot about it. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, well, my question is kind of, I'm just getting a lot of mixed emotions and opinions about whole life insurance investing.
Uh-huh.
And I'm wondering if the whole life insurance policy is structured right. Could it be considered as a sound investment?
I'm going to say no.
No. Okay.
The reason why, let's talk about it for a second. You got three kinds of life insurance policies. You got whole life, universal life, and term life. Those are the three basic kinds. The cheapest by far and one that is not considered any type, way, shape, or form an investment is term life.
Okay.
What you want to do, if you don't have to believe me, what you want to do is take a look at the premium you're going to pay for your whole life or universal life. And they tell you that, okay, well, a certain amount goes to investments and the other goes to premium to pay for if someone dies, you get. And then go to a term life for the same amount of insurance, say $500,000. Take a look at that premium. Then take the difference in those two premiums. If you invest that money over 10 years, figure out how much, let's say in an index, just plain old S&P 500 index, how much money would you have at the end of 10 years doing it that way versus how much money would you have buying the whole life or universal life policy, and you'll find you'll have far more money because chances are very slim that you're going to die, very slim, unless you have health problems, and chances good. So I tell people, just do the math, and I think you'll be, well, geez, I'm giving them that much money, and, you know, remember there's high fees and commissions and things like that, you know, 12-15% of the first year premium goes to a commission to the salesman. That's very true.
But what I'm wondering is, I know you can participate in some of these whole life, you know, insurance policies as far as doing the investing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know some companies do offer that. So
yes.
Even going that way, that probably would still be a higher way of paying, I guess.
Yeah, many of them will let you invest in any of the mutual funds, many mutual funds. So you take the money and you say, well, okay, you have this much money to invest in a mutual fund and you're building value in your policy. What they don't tell you is as you build that value, you're not paying capital gains tax. Okay? You pay that when you take that money out, whenever that is, 10, 20 years from now, and you have a false sense of how much money you're making. You're really not making that much. What is the taxes on that money? Appreciate the call. Thank you very much. We're halfway with Mark, everybody. We're open to your money questions anytime. Give us a call. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, and you can reach me right now at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk continues next. First, a word for KPP Financial, and it's all about growth. For the investor who is looking for optimum growth and is not averse to a higher level of risk, this investment program steps up for you. It's called Disciplined Equity, a program from KPP Financial. It targets focused growth for maximum returns. This strategy offers consistent exposure to the equity markets by focusing only on high-quality companies. It's more aggressive than our normal stock program. And although the portfolio is concentrated, it limits exposure to any one sector of the market. To find out more about it, just click on the Investments tab on InvestTalk.com or click on Contact Steve, and he'll be glad to fill you in. You can ask any question you'd like. And as with all of our programs, a KPP financial principal is personally invested right alongside their clients. This parallel investing is your assurance of optimum care and diligence. Check it out on InvestTalk.com. Now let's get back to the podcast. Now let's get back to the money talk. Financial advisor Steve Peasley is ready for your money question. Do you have an insurance question? He's open for that too. Our direct line is 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. Your portfolio is a mess. How do you tidy it up? That's one of our talking points. Also, I want to talk about what to do in a market sell-off or a panic. What should you do in a market sell-off or panic? Also, Jackson Hole meetings are going on. You know what that means? All Federal Reserve or all the government bankers of the world, the head government bankers of the world are meeting in Jackson Hole this week. And there's only two people that are there that people are going to be interested in what they say, and that's Janet Yellen and Mario. And everybody tells me I say the name wrong, Draga. Whatever he is. He's the EU chairman of the ECB, European Central Bank. Anyway, those are the only two people that are important, so we're going to talk about that. And the key test from a technical point of view of the S&P 500 as it's moving up and down is 2,400 on the S&P. Do you know what it is now? Well, today it was up 100. The Dow was up 196. The NASDAQ up 84, and the S&P was up 24. Do you know where it is right now? Key support. And we'll talk about technical analysis here in a minute. Remember, technical analysis is not a science. It's not. Let's get back to the 24-hour listener line and pick up another question. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Yeah, great show, guys. This is Mark from San Diego. I had a spinoff of Cars.com from Tegna, T-G-N-A. Tegna, D-E-G-N-A. NA Incorporated had a spinoff of Cars, CARS. So I was curious of what would be the better stock. I have small positions in both because of the spinoff. I was thinking of adding to it, but they both got knocked down a bit recently. Anyway, like your opinion. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, Tegna is a $2.7 billion company. Operates 46 television stations and affiliates, online sites covering one-third of the U.S. population. So that's a pretty decent, you know, it's hard. I cannot analyze a spinoff or a breakaway company quickly and easily. It's just impossible. So I don't know how, if that's a good deal or should you hold the Tegna or Cars if that's what the spinoff is. All I can tell you is this stock at $12.63 is always made money. It's going to make $1.08 this year, but it made $2.06 last year. So it was $16.25, now it's down to $12.63. You would think with that kind of fall, it should be even lower. Okay, but it then will recover next year, and that's probably why it's not lower. It's going to make $1.08 in 2017. That's almost half of what it did in 2016. But 2018, it's going to recover to make $1.66. Still not as much as 2016, but it's going to be a good recovery. The sales are very erratic. And the profits, have been very erratic. And whenever you see a company that way, usually the P.E. is low because you can't rely on things. Good return on equity at 20% on Tegna, Inc., and a decent dividend of 2.2%. So those are things are good. But mutual funds have been net sellers. 100 of them have left, 120 of them have left in the last year selling this stock. So they're not keen on it. And I don't see any insiders buying for any reason. So this would not be something, it just doesn't have the horses. I wouldn't be a buyer of it. And if it spun off something, I'd have to take a look at the financials of that spinoff. But this company doesn't look impressive to me. I would not be a buyer of it. TGNA is the symbol. 888-99-CHART. So what are your portfolio's a mess, and how do you tidy it up? And what it's talking about is that you buy things over time, and you might have this IRA or old 401k. Now you roll that into an IRA, and you had a Roth over here and another IRA over there and a regular account over here. And over the years, you've been, investing in some of them, ignoring others. And what they're saying is, when do you sit down and say, you know what, I need to get this in order? Why don't I have more than one IRA? What's in them? And do I even know, should I be holding those? Should I be in them? Some people think just because they have a bunch of mutual funds and they're different names of mutual funds in the different accounts, that they just got really good diversification, when in fact they don't. Maybe it's just a bunch of things doing the exact same thing and you're just paying extra fees you don't have to pay. You have to kind of know what is your goal, where are you going, and the funds that you have, the portfolios you have, are they getting you to where you want to go? Or do you just have a bunch of funds and you're happy and lucky and you don't really care? And if you don't really care, you got to remember how hard it is to get this money. You should care. What I'm suggesting is take a look at what you have. I've seen portfolios where they have, 100 shares of this and 10,000 shares of that, and there's absolutely no reason to have 100 shares of anything because the portfolio is big and that 100 shares is meaningless. So you're just having, it's what I call dead money. It's dead money. And maybe you shouldn't have 10,000 shares. Maybe that's too much. Anyways, you don't have to have hundreds of things or even dozens of mutual funds. That 8 to 10 mutual funds, all you need at the most. Maybe 12 if you want to have some sector funds. But if you have more than that, then you have too many. Stocks. You heard me talk about stocks. I don't like to have, if you're going to have a stock portfolio, have no more than about 3% of any one stock. That means you'll have about 30 stocks. And that's not a lot, by the way. That's not. You might be a lot for you because you have trouble keeping track of it. But in the business that we're talking about, which is managing money, that's not a lot. That's adequate. That's a good number. You can have less, but to no way in shape should you have more than less than 15, 20 stocks. And no more than you should have more, no more than maybe 5% any one. So if you had a combination of stocks and ETFs, okay, I'm okay with that, depending on what you're trying to accomplish. But this whole talking point is about cleaning up your portfolios. Get rid of stuff you don't really need. Okay? We have an award-winning system that can help you determine your risk level, your optimum risk level, what you should have. First, it assigns a risk number, by you answering a short list of a series of questions. It's not long. It only takes a few minutes. Then if you like, we can then take that number and help you determine if your current retirement portfolio or any portfolio matches that number, because it will, our system can assign a number to it. These are what we call risk numbers. The risk that you want to take, is that equal to the risk that you're taking or near it? You're close to it. And that's really what you want. We can do this for you. It's free. Doesn't matter what age. It's all about your temperament or your life situation and how much risk you want or you can afford. So give it a try. It's free on InvestTalk.com.
Every investment must be assessed from the point of view of liquidity. Can I get my money out? Potential for success, expected results, and potential for failure. How much can I lose? And how it fits with other investments in your portfolio. So what's the best way to gauge whether your portfolio measures up? Talk to Steve. Call him now at 888-99-CHART, or you can send him a note. Click on Contact Steve on InvestTalk.com.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Maddie from New York. I have a stock question for you. Currently looking at LG Display Co., ticker symbol LPL. Wondering if now might be a good time to buy. Thanks in advance and love the show. Bye.
LPL, LG Display Company Limited. It's the Korean manufacturer of LCD panels, you know, LG, used in high-definition TVs, notebook, computers, desktop monitors, mobile phones. And the only problem I have with this industry is, you know, it makes those screens, those panels, and they're very low margins on those, very low profit margin, almost like a commodity. So it's tough to delineate yourself. Now, we know, everybody knows LG because they're one of the biggest. It's a, you know, huge company, $98 billion. No, it's not that big. $9.8 billion company. Okay, so it's or is it, yeah, I'm trying to read. Yeah, $9.8 billion, it looks like. They have really good sales growth recent quarters. That's good. And they're kind of inexpensive as far as P.E. ratio. But I warn you that they kind of deserve a low P.E. ratio. They're going to make a dollar. They made $1.10 per share last year. And that was a low in the last two or three years. Made more than that. In 2017, this year, they're going to make $2.82. Now, why? You might want to find out why. Did they buy a company and that's why they more than doubled their earnings and their sales have grown 14 to 20% the last two quarters? Or is it because organic growth is really starting to take off? But next year, they're only going to make $1.79 per share. It's going to go from $2.82 down to $1.79. And that's probably why the stock was at $16.50 not that long ago. I mean, we're talking about July, and then it fell down to $12.75. Now it's recovered a bit here in August to $13.74. So it's starting to recover. It broke above the 200-day moving average yesterday and more today. That is a buy signal, long-term buy signal, but it's going to hit a lot of resistance right around here. So it's going to have a tough time to keep going up. That they have the next big, if they can break through to like 14, 14.25, the next resistance like $16.75, $17. So that's a pretty good move percentage wise, and it looks like it's got the possibility. 5-year range is and the PE range is 4 to 420. So and at $1.79 and $13 stock, remember that's what's going to make next year. $1.79 make $2.82 this year, but you don't want to. You want to figure out on this year, you want to figure out what next year's earnings is going to be. And $1.79 means that PE is not as low as it looks. Okay, because that means it's going to be around, oh, 8 or so instead of 5. Still pretty low, but I don't like the return on equity is only 7%. Probably the profit margins are pretty thin because, as I said, making these screens, this is LPL, making the screens is a low margin business. It's almost like a commodity. It's very difficult. It's a difficult business to be in. But it looks like this might be the area to be a buyer. So what to do in the next market sell-off or panic? What should you do if the market sells off really sharply or everybody panics? And what do I mean by that? Well, I'm talking about a 30% decline or more, and that's a total bear market. Anything above 20 is a bear market. And there's only been 6 30% or more declines since the 1920s. There has not been that many. Okay? And 5 years later of these declines are still below their old highs. It's pretty unusual to recover fast. It takes a few years. But what is your best course of action if that something like that happens? Like in 1987 was the only time that it crashed and didn't take that long. Remember in 1987, October, it went down 20% in one day. Remember that? So we're talking about pretty steep declines here. What is the best thing to do? Nothing. If you haven't already, if you have a plan, you should stay with the plan. If that plan is buy through my 401k at work and just buy every paycheck, you just keep doing it because no one can tell you when or how much or how long the bear market will be. And you could be missing out on the bull market phase. No one can tell you how far it's going to go down, and you can't guess the bottom just like you can't best guess the top to try to get out. So you should have a plan, and you work the plan. That's it. End of story. Just work the plan. Forget about the day-to-day move of the market because you can't time it. What's your plan? My plan is to buy big blue chip stocks and hold them for 20 years. Then why even looking at the market? Forget about it. Maybe you have a plan. Every paycheck, I'm putting 5% of my money into the market. My employer's matching 5%, and I'm buying XYZ mutual funds through the 401k plan. Then stay with the plan. Another plan. I'm now 62 years old. I'm going to retire in 3 years. I'm going to start reducing my risk. I'm going to have a mix of stocks and bonds. That's your plan. Implement it. See, that's what I'm talking about. Don't get carried away. You cannot guess the top. You cannot guess the bottom. So why even try? And I've told you before, KPP, we know how to recognize overvaluation. We even can recognize where we are in the economic cycle, not with exactitude, but pretty close. We can recognize certain things, but we cannot guess where the market's going to go. Oh, we can guess. We just never be right. If you are right or somebody's right, they just got lucky. That's it. If you try, you don't know where the market's going to go exactly. You just don't know. You're listening to Invest Talk, and we're listening to you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can ask your question anytime. We can talk together live, 4 to 5 Pacific time. We'll try to get your questions next at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Justin. This is Henning from Kiev, Ukraine. Great program, as always, listening to you on the podcast. My question today is about restaurant stocks. I am in particular interested in ticker symbol CAKE, C-A-K-E. It's had a significant drop over the last month, and I was just wondering what your thoughts were on getting in and what the projected growth rate might be. So a good price and what you think the future of these stocks hold. Thanks again. I'll be listening on the podcast. Have a great day now. Bye-bye.
Okay, the symbol C-A-K-E is Cheesecake Factory, everybody. C-A-K-E. They have 208 Cheesecake Factory restaurants, 13 Grand Lux cafes, and one Sugar Pan Asian kitchen in 39 states. They actually have a Cheesecake Factory in Saudi Arabia, too. Anyway, it's a $2 billion company, and I think it's a pretty darn good value. But I'll tell you what, we had it. We didn't have it very long because it broke support. And you know what? I can't hang around a stock that broke support. Yeah, it's just, on a chart, it's just saying, I'm still going down. Fundamentally, their earnings are going to grow 6%, 9% next year, but fall 6% this year. They're going to make $2.90 next year, and it's a $42 stock. So it's not cheap necessarily, But compared to its own prices over the years, this is a fairly low-priced stock. Because it's growing, it's a growing company, but it's only growing in the single digits, not growing 15, 20%. It's growing to its sales. I'm talking about 2 to 10% in the last year. So it's growing, but not growing that fast. And there's not a lot of insiders buying, even though there was insiders buying at $48. Now it's $42. It pays a 2.8% dividend. It has a really good return on equity of 23%. That's very good. Really good, strong cash flow. Management owns 8%, so they're really involved. They own a lot of their own company. It has a lot of good. There's hardly any debt. And, you know, it has, they have a lot of good fundamental numbers that tell you it's a good value. But the stock price is still falling, Henning. I'd leave it alone. Wait till it stops falling. But it's a good one to have on your watch list. But you want to see some strength come into it. You really do. Let's go to Wendy in Chino Hills. How you doing, Wendy?
I'm doing good. How are you, Steve?
I'm good. Thank you for the call.
Thank you. I have a question regarding, I was studying the previous calls from like 2009 or something. You mentioned how to decide a value or growth, something of the stock.
Yes.
So for the mid cap, you were talking about like earnings time growth rate or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And then there you talked about something about like a PE ratio, like in the past 5 years, the
yes.
lows and the highs.
Right.
So the second one, which one does it apply to? Does it apply to all of them or just to some?
Only to some. And what Wendy is talking about, everybody, as I gave over the years, I've given two formulas. I try to evaluate a company. And one is to multiply,
right.
yeah, multiply next year's earnings per share times the growth rate. So Cheesecake Factory is going to make $2.90 next year. There's a company we just talked about. But its growth rate is only between 2 and 10%. So let's say, let's give it 7%. Let's be generous. Well, 7 times $2.90 means the stock is worth under $21. And it's a $42 stock. The other way, there's a quick and dirty way. The other way is take the five-year high and low of the PE range and multiply it times the earnings. Well, the low in the last 5 years is 15. So 15 times 290 is about where it is, $42 a share. And that's the low.
Okay.
So, Wendy, the stocks they don't work on. They don't work on very small companies, these two methods, and they don't work on very large companies. Very small companies because they grow so fast. Very large companies because they don't grow hardly at all. So on the growth rate formula, it's in the middle companies, you know, that grow decently. But,
okay.
You know, the PE ratio works good on almost all companies. Okay?
Okay. Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Wendy. Appreciate the call. Time's up for the hour, everybody. A reminder, I will be in San Jose tomorrow, Wednesday, August 23rd, to visit with listeners for informal retirement reviews. I have one slot open on the day. To reserve your hour, just go to investtalk.com and click on Portfolio View. Might be best to even call the office, 800-557-5461, 800-557-5461, because you can, if you want to get there. I'm Financial Advisor Steve Peasley, President of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everybody, the whole KPP family, thanks for being with us. And join us for Invest Talk again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.